Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Women of Color Network Hour.
You're gone, baby. It's a woman's show.
Listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Carol,
hello.
How are you? This is Pastor Matthews.
Hello,
Pastor,
how are
Anderson.
You? This is...
I'm doing well.
Good. We have...
Chriswell.
Thank you.
George Duran.
Thank you.
Reverend Townsend. Townsend.
Thank
okay.
you. Thank you.
And
if everyone
this
could,
is Pastor Anderson.
Excellent. We're happy to have each one of you as our special guests and George Durant as my co-host. I'm Carolyn Russell, Executive Director of A Safe Place, Domestic Violence Program in the City of Oakland. And I'm also the project leader in collaboration with George Durant on the African American Domestic Peace Project and our faith-based project. This evening, our show includes guests, and I'd like for each one of you to do a brief introduction. If you would, to give those who are listening to our show some knowledge of who you are. And if we could start with our co-host and move along.
I'm George Durand, CEO of Star Track, a domestic violence program in San Francisco, the only African-American-centered program in San Francisco, and co-host with Carolyn Russell.
Thank you. Reverend Townsend?
Hi, I'm Reverend Arnold Townsend, and I am a minister at Church Without Walls in San Francisco. Been active in the San Francisco community for quite a number of years. Presently, I serve as the first vice president of the San Francisco branch NAACP and president of the board of the EOC of San Francisco Economic Opportunity Council of San Francisco.
Thank you.
Next.
Pass. Pastor Garrett.
My name is Pastor Garrett Anderson. I am the associate pastor of the Market Street Seventh-day Adventist Church in West Oakland. I previously was a practicing attorney. I spent some time in the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office, and I clerked also in the Pennsylvania Trial and Appellate Courts, and now I have come here, and after going back and Pursuing God's Call, I am pastoring full-time in West Oakland.
Thank you. Pastor Matthews.
I am Pastor Matthews, pastor of the Corinthian Baptist Church here in West Oakland. I was formerly pastoring at the Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church in San Diego. I am the one of the many teachers of the Western Baptist State Congress and of Christian Ed in Southern California.
Thank you. Other guests? Yes, will we have our other guests introduce themselves as we have other guests joining the call?
Pastor Chriswell of San Francisco, pastor of New Life.
Good evening. Issa Eamon Krause is on the line. I'm the Assistant Chief Formation Officer for Alameda County.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to ask all of our guests if you could make sure that your background music is muted as we move forward with the show. And I want to thank you all for joining the show. As you know, we've rehearsed the introduction, and this show is a result of a partnership with the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, the African American Domestic Peace Project. And the topic tonight is the role of the church, faith, and domestic violence. The reason we've chosen this topic is because we believe that the church within the African American community is critically important in terms of historical research around domestic violence and the role of the black church. So this evening we have an hour show, and I'd like to give everyone an opportunity to respond to some of the discussion we will have around the role of the church in preventing domestic violence. I'd like to start off with some information around the church and its role in some of the research and what we've realized in terms of African-American and the African-American community, and that the black church is the oldest and most stable, you know, infrastructure, you know, and historically the black church has been and always and still is the place where important issues concerning African Americans in the community are addressed. So we have history with domestic violence and how ministers and faith leaders have played a role in either preventing domestic violence or condoning domestic violence or playing a role in keeping victims in those relationships. So that's our topic for this evening. And I'd like to give everyone just an opportunity to speak on how they have experienced domestic violence within their congregation, as well as what are your thoughts around faith leaders and domestic violence. We will talk about the role of the church as well as some of the strategies and how we can move forward in terms of our own community in terms of preventing domestic violence, instituting programs and services for victims. So if we could start with our co-host, George Durant, and he could speak a little bit about his experience and why he has joined this project in representing faith leaders in San Francisco. George?
Thank you, Karen. First of all, let me put a preface on it. Violence starts in the home. It filters out into the community. My experience within the faith community is the patriarchism of the church. The man is the head. The woman should be submissive to the man. And a bunch of other documented scriptures and doctrines that the church used to subject and aggregate the situation. And the fact is, in the African American community, whatever goes on in this family stays in this family. And nine times out of ten, that is reinforced within the church. Now, what got me really engaged in this work, this critical work, was what could our church do? And from our church, we established a domestic violence intervention via a batterer's intervention program. And hopefully through this process and organizing more churches in San Francisco, that since in San Francisco the greatest number of calls to 911 of domestic violence stem from the African American community. So that was striking, and that came from a study that was done by the women's organization. The San Francisco Women's Organization put this study out. So that was alarming. And the other aspect, there's only one African American specific culturally sensitive program in San Francisco. So I'm hoping that the ministers that I invited here, and we organize other ministers, that we can address this issue in a more collaborative and feasible way.
Thank you. Thank you, George. I'd like to ask Pastor Garrett to respond in terms of his interest in this work and your role as a minister around this issue of faith and domestic violence.
Certainly, and I appreciate, first let me say I appreciate being included in this discussion, and it's so terribly important. I encountered domestic violence from the legal side when I was in Philadelphia in the criminal justice system, and it's just such a terribly difficult area of law, life, and of violence to encounter. When I came into ministry, I had encounters with some of my members and former friends, actually, that called on me to ask, what do I do in the face of intimate partner domestic violence? And that's actually something that I'm currently counseling a few
mm-hmm.
couples on
mm-hmm.
right now. And I didn't realize how prevalent domestic violence was. I didn't realize how many millions of women were victims of physical assault every year, or that a quarter of all women would experience domestic violence in their lifetime. One of the most shocking things is how young a lot of the women in these abusive relationships that come for counseling is, young, in their early 20s. And so the challenge is, and one of the most effective things that I've done just in my counseling is something that has been recommended to us in our training, is to let the person that's coming for counseling know that we believe them and that we're listening to them. In my church, we actually have on a monthly basis a group that meets former victims and family members of violence, but it's something that I actually want to make much more of a priority in our church. And so in the next year to 18 months, we're going to be doing preaching and teaching series on specifically on domestic violence and intimate partner violence.
Thank you. I'd like to hear from Reverend Townsend.
Yeah, thank you, Carolyn. You all bear with me, as you can tell. I'm losing my voice, but I'll be here till it holds out. And I got to do something because I'm supposed to use my voice this Sunday. Let me say that my interest in this from the African-American church perspective is a good friend of mine has a radio show on one of the blog radio networks. And the title of his show, or the slogan for his show, is "Where We Talk About What We Don't Talk About," is what the show, and that is the problem with domestic violence in the church. It is in the church. It is a part of the church, and we don't talk about it. And the reality is that the church ought to be the place where you compact before you come to unpack everything that is affecting your life. And we've got these little areas that we don't bring about, that we don't talk about. As George was saying just a minute ago, is that, you know, I've heard the thing, well, would go on in a man's house, it ought to stay up in his house. But if that's the case, we shouldn't talk to him about the money that exists in that house. When we talk about tithing, we shouldn't talk about any other aspect of what's going on with that family if we can't talk about domestic violence. If it's the case that we have been anointed to bring healing to the brokenhearted, then who else is that but those who have been victims of domestic violence? And so we've got to start addressing it. And when we talk about how young it is, it gets worse than the 20-year-olds. I remember an experience at McDonald's on Fillmore Street when years ago our church was two doors from McDonald's. There was a young girl from church working there. I saw her one day. She was crying. I mean, what's wrong with you? And she talked about her boyfriend coming up to her job because it was payday and taking her check, making her go cash it across the street at the liquor store and taking her money. And she was from the church, but people are afraid to talk about it within the church. And we have the facade that if that's going on in your home, then somehow you're not holy, that somehow there's something lacking in your relationship with God if you have this going on in the home, so you can't bring it up. There's no one who's willing to talk to you about it. We must change that dynamic, because if they cannot bring it to the church, who else can they bring it to?
Thank you for that, Reverend Challenton. I think they call that the yoke of silence in the name of solidarity. You know, it weighs upon the fact that the black church, you know, upon the black community. So silence of the church regarding abuse of women, you know, it's almost like a conspiracy,
the
church.
It is a conspiracy because people have misinterpreted and misapplied scripture to suggest that it's okay to brutalize women. And that's really clear that men have a right almost to do it. And that's clearly a lack of understanding of the text. And it's absolutely essential that preachers speak out against it. We can't leave it up to, we can't expect lay people to be ahead of us on this issue, but in many cases they are.
Well said, Reverend Townsend. Reverend Criswell from San Francisco, we'd like to hear from you.
From my perspective, and thank you again for inviting me to be on this talk show and on this critical issue, I think that one problem that with the clergy and the church as well is that, first of all, it has to be identified. And once, if it is identified, we're trained to identify it and know what we're dealing with, then it comes to the point of, do you want to get involved? Because now you're dealing with something legal, something that maybe law enforcement may have to deal with. You don't have the training to know how to deal with it. And so you kind of shy away from it and act like it ain't happening. And there is no confidant. There is no open forum, a place for people to share. So you don't know how to address and how to minister to those who are being victimized by domestic violence. So I think that we have to do something, some type of ministry. I've heard that spoken on this show already, that some churches do have ministry. But for the most part, I think we're behind the curve in dealing with this. And you put it out on the forefront like you're doing in this talk show and kind of help advance us and get us more knowledgeable about what we're dealing with here.
Exactly. Could we hear from Ms. Cross from probation?
Certainly. Good evening. Thanks for having us. We appreciate being able to have some input on this very important and serious topic that we take very seriously. We currently have about 3% of our total actively supervised cases are for domestic violence. And, you know, just to echo what many of the pastors said, we do recognize it as being, you know, a systemic concern that impacts the entire family. We have 4 staff that are dedicated to only domestic violence caseloads, and approximately 20 different programs that we do refer out to for domestic violence services, and those batterer treatment programs are recertified annually. And we have really good partners in the faith-based community. Some of our providers are from the faith-based community. Many of our other programs and treatment services are housed in churches across the county. And we are very fortunate to have certified domestic violence batterer treatment programs throughout the county. So East County, South County, et cetera. And I really think that does speak to just how widespread this very serious concern is. You know, domestic violence, it doesn't see class, it doesn't see race. It really is across the board. Can be quite serious for families.
Thank you. I think that San Francisco has always been a leading model in terms of some of the programs and partnerships. So it's great to hear that programs are being implemented. And I think that's what we want to talk about. You know, we see faith as an area of prevention, primary prevention. You know, I think we're all aware of the 3 areas of prevention. And what we've been accustomed to in the movement, my experience has been, for the most part, outreach, where we've gone out to speak at churches occasionally. But what we want to do is look at how we can move past outreach into programming and how we can assist and help churches build their capacity to better educate themselves, as well as change some of the messages, talk about some of the scriptures that have been misleading and some of the myths that continue to evolve in churches. And I just wanted to make sure that I picked up all of our guest speakers. Is there anyone who has joined the call that has not had an opportunity to speak? We did have a Reverend Jeremiah Captain from Oakland who was to join us. And so if he joins us, he can join the conversation. I wanted to say a little bit about Dr. Oliver Williams, who is an African-American male scholar and founder and executive director of the Institute of Domestic Violence in the African American Community. And Dr. Williams indicates that although, you know, theories about offering explanations and really supporting male victims by, you know, showing up in court, being character witnesses for perpetrators, and how we need to change that in terms of having faith-based leaders support victims and not support perpetrators in the court system, because we do know that oftentimes faith leaders can be used and often will represent perpetrators in the court system. And I do think we have, as Pastor Garrett has said, he's had some experience in the legal system around this. I wanted to also speak a little bit about what African-American women themselves have said about a church. A Safe Place has a shelter program. We also have a mental health community center. And we do have women who get up every morning to go to churches and women who come to our community center to seek counseling. And we have a Dr. Tamika Gullum. She is an associate professor, Department of Health Promotion and Policy at the University of Massachusetts. And she's done a lot of study around spirituality and domestic violence in the African American community. And one of the quotes some of her studies speaks to women believe that the churches should offer resources to help women in intimate partner situations, and they basically stated if the churches can see that it is so many women, even in their church, that's married to alcoholics and drug addicts and all that kind of stuff, and they go to church on Sunday and beat you up on Sunday night, if the ministers of the churches offered programming, it would help. The first we're going to say is, please, God, don't let him kill me. So even when women are at a point of losing their lives, see, they're still holding on to faith. So what we're looking at is how faith leaders can become first responders. One of the issues within the African-American community and has created and increased the violence against predominantly women has been the system, the judicial system, that is entrusted by African-Americans. So because African-American victims do not trust the criminal justice system, and the criminal justice system hasn't always been a friend to victims of domestic violence, we want to change law enforcement as being the first responders, because we know that faith leaders often are placed in a position of counselors. Many African-Americans, particularly African-American women, will turn to their faith when they're in crisis. So if faith leaders can become first responders within the African-American community, we can look at some of the traditional approaches and strategies that we have been using and look at how some of these new approaches and strategies in getting faith leaders more involved with domestic violence, therefore they're more educated. So in speaking about the role of the church, I'd like to hear from everyone around, how do you play, what role do you play within your congregation around preventing domestic violence, creating more awareness around it, what have you done, and what your intentions are? If we could start with Pastor Matthews.
Okay. Again, thank you for allowing me to be part of this project. Is that currently I am involved in a domestic violent marriage where the couple is on their way to divorce court. The male partner is the one who is currently being abused. He has often came to me wanting to know what to do, where to go, and possibly helping to avoid the abuse. I didn't know that it was as bad as it was until I heard some of the trauma as to what he was going through, i.e., which led him to bringing up the awareness here at the church to let all of our young women and young men know that the domestic violence, it is not something that you put on the back burner and you think that is going to eventually go away. So my role currently is to begin to raise the awareness within the black community, and then again to receive some type of formal training, teaching as to what we can do to continue to avoid this.
Thank you. And hopefully you're aware that a safe place does serve male victims in a separate location. We do recognize that men are also abused. We know that the highest percentage of people who are abused are African-American women. However, we serve male victims, and we do know that male victims exist. And I think what we want to do is look at how churches and leaders such as yourself can make friendly referrals. how you can make referrals to agencies when you feel that a situation is beyond what you can manage. And I think that's what we want to talk about as well. Where, what are the boundaries for faith leaders, and how can those of us who are doing this work support your capacity and ability to better serve victims, whether they're male, female, or couples within your congregation. But if others could speak as well, Reverend Criswell or any of the other ministers can speak to what your what you see as your role or your experience.
Yes, this is Pastor Criswell. And, I want to say that that as far as, I don't know the percentage of the people that are aware in the churches and how they are addressing this issue, but for me, I know it exists, but it's somewhat under the radar. And because it's under the radar, and just like the previous ministers said, there needs to be some type of formal training for the clergy to know how to go about doing this. My role in the church is to preach the gospel, but as well provide peace and unity among the congregation. And there are times, there have been times when I have had to deal with the situation as a confidant, have call-ins to tell me that they're having problems and that this man or this, you know, I'm being abused and I want to get out of this relationship. I tried to leave and I was stalked and how far do you go and where do you draw the line? Where do law enforcement come in? So, you know, as clergy, we need to know how far to go, and thank God that there is a program like yours that we can refer to. But I think that we need to, this awareness has to be, we have to raise awareness in the local churches. It starts with the pastors being equipped with the training to know what to do.
I appreciate that. If I could just speak to your comments about, you know, the church and in terms of education and your desire to be educated, I think it's great because it certainly does show progress and we need more faith leaders. But to support what you're stating around the need for education, I think it's widely known that faith leaders actually do want to have more education around domestic violence. And I did find some information on the World Church, and it spoke about educators within the domestic violence community working with faith leaders such as yourself. But the study did find that, you know, 60% of pastors had spoken one or fewer times about domestic and sexual violence from the pulpit. However, most congregations do not actually have programs or have implemented programs, and some of it is due to lack of education, formal education. But I do think we are moving towards having more ministers like yourself recognize it and reach out for it. So I think that is a great thing. So moving on, Reverend Townsend, would you like to comment? Is your voice at a place where you'd like to comment?
Yeah, Carolyn, just real quickly, what the problem is, yes, we are called to preach the gospel. But if we're going to be successful with the gospel, I mean, we're preaching the gospel for a reason. And if we're not preaching to make people better, then I don't know what we're preaching for or what we're preaching about. And to do that, we have to be holistic, meaning we have to meet the people at the point of their need and in the center of their circumstance on every level. On every level, our churches have got to start programs where we deal with our people's health, our people's nutrition, the whole thing. And dealing with this issue of domestic violence is one of the most important and key issues that we've got to come to grips with. And we've got to accept the fact that in our community, we are where we are with domestic violence because we've got our people living a lie. We're telling them the lies that we built up around certain selective scriptures that we pulled out and have been used, as we said earlier, to hurt and subject and subjugate people. And someone said that if the truth will make you free, before you can deal with that truth, you've got to figure out which lie it is that's holding you hostage first before we make you free. And by the way, preachers, that'll preach. But to do that. And so one of the things we've got to do is we've got to create an educational program for pastors first. And then that educational program then has to be applied within the local church. Because, thank you. Because they're going to bring that issue right to the church. And a lot of our violence issues grow out of domestic violence and other issues. I'm right now pulling up at a church where we're going to deal with the issue of this young man that the police shot because he had stabbed somebody. He had stabbed somebody, and it led to the police shooting him to death in San Francisco last night. My curiosity is, what did this young man see growing up that taught him that violence is a way to deal with a dispute? That taught him, because most of us, many of us, our first violence comes of what we saw in the home as the way to deal with issues.
Thank you, Reverend Townsend. George Durant, before
Gentlemen.
We move on, I'd like to introduce a new guest to our show. She just joined us, and she is LaDonna Combs. And I'd like to introduce LaDonna and have her give her thoughts about this conversation. LaDonna is a leading evangelist, and she can introduce herself, but I'd like to have her join the conversation. And I'd like to hear from George around what we've just spoken about. But, LaDonna, I'd like to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and share what your experience has been, just in terms of the role of the church in your experience, how it has played a role in keeping women in these homes and violent relationships, as well as what you see in terms of what the role of the church should be in preventing domestic violence. And then I'd like to have more comments from George. LaDonna?
Good evening, Carolyn, and all your distinguished guests. Thanks for having me on. I've been enjoying so many of the comments from the clergy, and they've been awesome. I've been taking it all in. And I'm an evangelist at a Greater Grace Temple in Detroit, Michigan, where our bishop is Bishop Charles H. Ellis III. And we have a very prolific domestic violence program there, being a survivor and also being an evangelist and also starting the Sisters Against Abuse Society, which is a faith-based organization that deals with domestic violence specifically for women in the church on the premises that we know the church really is a spiritual trauma center. And when we talk about the church being able to provide programming, it is important. It's important for the African-American church because statistically, Carolyn, we know that African-American women suffer domestic violence at a rate that's 35% higher than white women. And because they stand at the intersection of so many barriers for help because of being the system and systemically being so disparaged and them being poised as being, as being strong black women, buying into the myth that she can handle anything in the home and she can pray her way out of these situations, and her spirituality being linked to the success of the violence going into the home, is just a myth when we know it's rooted in power and control. And it is important for clergy to get training because historically it's not supposed to happen. The church has not been prepared because it's not supposed to happen, and we didn't know any better for any better resources. But with, the lethality of African-American women being killed by domestic violence and men due to reactionary violence of her defending herself, the church has got to, and that being the first place historically where women of color go to for help you've got to be have more comprehensive resources to keep her safe first, and then to find out what we can do to save, you know, both the perpetrator and the victim. But it has to be understood that the victim, you know, her lethality goes up 75% once she leaves these situations. And the church also has to develop a better relationship with mainstream service providers, because it's kind of an adversarial relationship there, where the church doesn't trust service providers because they feel they advocate for divorce, and then service providers don't trust the church because they feel the church is advocating for the victim to stay and her spirituality being linked to his behavior, when really the victim hasn't been allowed or doesn't have a platform to really express what she's really going through. She can't really come to the pastor and say, she's telling him, well, we're not getting along and he's really not doing, you know, right and he's really mistreating me. She's not telling him, well, he's calling me a bitch or he slapped me or he's sexually assaulting me in the marriage because I'm supposed to be submissive to him. She's telling the service provider that. She's not telling her pastor that. You know, so they're both thinking, the service provider is thinking, why isn't the church doing something about this? And then the pastor's thinking, why is the service provider trying to break this marriage up? But the victim doesn't have a platform to really speak because she doesn't think she can. So that's where the training for the clergy really needs to come into place, to know that it's not a marital problem, it's a crime.
Yes. I appreciate your comments so much, LaDonna. I really appreciate and you having the opportunity to join us. LaDonna was mm-hmm. with us at our National Faith and Domestic Violence Conference here in Oakland last mm-hmm. year. So we have her again tonight, and she speaks very well from a provider's perspective as well as from a victim's perspective. And I think what's also critical that LaDonna can speak to, and I think George, who can speak to this as well, because, George, you work within the system. And I spoke tonight about how there's been such an increase and a consistent increase in domestic violence among African-American women because of the lack of trust within the criminal justice or, you know, with the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
So you working in the field, and we don't hold it against you, you're working in the system, and you know that the church, and you're doing this work, so you can speak to your experience of how African-Americans distrust the system and how we can move into that area, because that is an issue.
Few things were said. One, if I'm in the service industry and I don't know what's available, can I really help somebody? So if somebody comes to me with an issue and I don't know where the resources are to facilitate that issue, then I'll have to use some other kind of stuff or say, well, I don't know what to tell you, or let's just pray on it. The other thing, systemically in the African-American community, we're seeing that, you know, nationwide now. There's this major distrust. If a partner calls the police, now the family's saying, why'd you call the police? If the perpetrator goes to jail, now that's a resource that's taken out of that family. If the victim goes to church, they're going to use scripture to say, well, God says that, you know, that a woman shouldn't leave a man, and there's, you know, Corinthians and a bunch of other scriptures to validate that. So based on what Pastor Criswell and Pastor Townsend said, how many pastors know about the resources available to them that are addressing issues of domestic violence? To me, that would be a start to bring the awareness up, so when people do come and the issue does come up, the pastors or whoever their designees has a resource that they could refer people. And thirdly, there has to be a collaboration in our community with the service providers, with the church, and with law enforcement on how to respond to this in a way because the data shows that most people get back together no matter what happens, unless it's a death or something. But so how do we massage all of those entities in a holistic way where everybody's getting their needs met? And I think, Carolyn, with the new initiative coming up, what we're doing in Oakland and San Francisco at this time is organizing the faith base. So Pastor Criswell, Pastor Townsend, you know, from this conversation today, need to go to their colleagues and say, we need to get together because Safe Place, the Institute on African American and Domestic Violence, we're coming in. We're going to bring some technicians in to train you, to bring you up to speed, and then it's going to be incumbent upon them on how to facilitate that into their congregation and then work with service providers that are doing the work for not only the perpetrators but for the survivors and the victims of this, because most churches aren't sensitive about people hurting in their church in the first place. Whether it's domestic violence or any other issue.
Well, thank you for that, George. And I'd like to come back, George, to this point and maybe have LaDonna speak to it as well in terms of the role of law enforcement. I think we should talk about that, particularly since I've made a statement around, you know, there's a problem with law enforcement in the African-American community. And I think that bears discussion. But I want, before I address that again, I want to introduce, we have another guest who joined the show, and this is the president of the Baptist Union in the city of Oakland, Pastor Jeremiah Captain. Are you on, Pastor Captain?
Yes, I am. And thank you so much for the opportunity. And with one correction, I am not the president, but it sounds good. I'm working on that too. It sounds good. But we do want to recognize our president. President Joe Smith is our president. I'm Pastor Jeremiah Captain, pastor of the Galatian Missionary Baptist Church in the beautiful city of Oakland, California. And I'm honored to be a part of this panel tonight. And I'm going to be brief because I want to get mine in if I don't get nothing else in. This subject has been very silent. You know, there's just no place in America for domestic violence. It's unacceptable in our society. It should be zero tolerance. This all started, you know, when I was a young kid in the 60s, you know, the wife stayed at home, had a bunch of babies and whatnot, and the man was very abusive, and, you know, we know them horrible stories. I'm a victim myself on both sides, you know, before the flood, before I got saved, okay? You know, I've been part of this court system and all of that. I know all of that part and what you have to go through, anger management. I know all about that. My daughter just recently was a victim about 3 months ago. Her significant other beat her unconsciously. And it was very hard for me. She received a very serious black eye that required surgery. The eyeball actually locked, and they had to go into the eye and put a plate there and put a plate under her cheek. But, you know, it was very difficult for me, but I had to be strong. And I had to be a father to her and give her all her father support that she needed. And this is a situation, like one of the ministers said, it really needs to start at home. We're working on our next generation. I'm sure everybody probably have grandchildren now. And they don't need to see any type of violence, any type of bad language, any type of bad relationship. I've been married to my bride for 35 years, okay? And one thing we did not do, we did not argue and fight in front of our children. And I got 5 children, 11 grandkids. So I really believe that was a blessing. The last thing I want to say is that we need premarital counseling. We're jumping up, we're marrying these people, and we're not giving them counseling. You know, and me personally, for me to marry somebody, they have to go at least three sessions of counseling, 30 minutes. I got to talk to a couple, at least three different times, you know, to kind of get them out of this gray area, you know. And then they need relationship counseling, you know, before, I mean, you know, they need to know how to communicate. But usually fights and arguments and relationships go bad for one or two reasons. Either money is short, you know, or jealousy is another one, you know. They think they're, you know, playing around or whatever. So, you know, there's not a whole lot that merits these type of problems with domestic violence. Then it leads into verbal, then it leads into physical, and then somebody get hurt. We just recently, I don't know if it's in Oakland or in the Bay Area, where the young lady was killed by her boyfriend just a few days ago. And you know, and so I just think that, yes, the church, the faith-based community, they have been very silent. And I'm honored to be able to be a part of this faith-based discussion and have the opportunity to share on this national radio station and also be able to share in my pulpit, because we've been very silent. We don't preach about this. We preach about David and Goliath, but we don't preach about, you know, a woman going home getting beat on, or a man going home being mentally abused, you know. So we need to really study this. We need to labor with this a little bit more. I'm honored today. Thank you for the opportunity.
This is Pastor Anderson. Miss Russell, might I piggyback on what Pastor Captain just said?
Yes.
Miss Russell.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate Pastor Captain's comments. Reverend J.R. Thicklin is the pastor of the Kingdom Harvest Ministries in Florida, and he said a few years back, you cannot change that which you are unwilling to confront. You cannot confront that which you are unwilling to identify. You cannot identify that which you are unwilling to acknowledge. You cannot acknowledge that which you are unwilling to accept. And I really appreciate Pastor Captain's comments, because we have to take a responsibility and accountability, even as ministers. And if I'm honest, the truth is that domestic violence has not been as much of a priority, even in my ministry, as it should have been. But the second thing that I want to piggyback on that is even more concerning for me, in addition to accountability requiring ministers, and not just ministers, but churches, taking a good, hard look in the mirror about who we are and who we want to be. One of the things that I believe Evangelist Combs mentioned was about empowerment and about the link between domestic violence and control. But one of the things we realize is that domestic violence is directly related to economic empowerment. And what we realize is that studies have come out recently that tell us that the gap in wealth in American households is more extreme now than at any time since the Great Depression. And one of the things that concerns me the most is that if we recognize that our membership is losing in terms of economic wealth and empowerment, then that seems to suggest that the domestic violence epidemic, if you will, is going to get worse. And I think that it presents a particular challenge, and something that we need to speak to as ministers isn't just the physicality of it or the criminality of it, but the underlying causes that I believe Reverend Townsend alluded to that relate to not just the home, but the male and male, well, shall we say male dominance, but the male's ability to provide for his family and feel empowered that way, such that they're not inclined to lash out physically and violently against their partners and their children.
If I could, Sister Russell, just
Reverend Townsend, please.
Yeah, just real quickly, let me say this before we beat the church up too bad, and there's room for much criticism. Also, providers, the officials, public officials, the prosecutors, law enforcement that you talked about a minute ago, have been slow in recognizing the importance of the church and the value the church can be in this whole discussion. of bringing these issues to us and being helpful in waking the church up to the importance of getting involved in this. Those first-line folks need to recognize of making the church partners in first-line defense of domestic violence and trying to root it out, because everyone in our community had some contact with the church. If he don't go to church, his mama go to church. If she don't go, grandmama go, his favorite auntie go to church. Somebody in that family has contact with the church. And so we need to make sure that all of us that are, and that's one of the reasons I appreciate the Institute and Dr. Williams for recognizing that we cannot get out of this unless the church plays a role. And so, and as preacher pastors, we've then got to hold other preacher pastors accountable to for being involved in fighting and resisting and educating around domestic violence.
Thank you, Reverend Towson. You know, I'd like to speak and address this issue around law enforcement as first responders.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what we're talking about here, and I appreciate your comments, Pastor Garrett, on Reverend Thicklin. We actually had him joining us tonight, but he had another engagement. I think LaDon and I agree that he's been present tonight. So I want to address the issue around how law enforcement has been the first responders. What we're talking about is, you're correct, the church is a central figure within the African-American community. Let's be honest about it. And you're correct. There's someone in every family. There's somebody that's going to church. But we're also clear that we want faith leaders, and that's what we're trying to do here. We want faith leaders to be recognized as some of our first responders within the African-American community, because we have traditionally moved away from the faith community, and we want to bring that back to the faith community. So we see primary prevention as one of our primary focus areas in this work, but also to make faith leaders first responders after they have received education. And I think LaDonna can speak to the issue of domestic violence being, you know, the as I said, the quiet solidarity of the hush-hush within the church. But how can we have law enforcement as partners but not as first responders? And I think you're correct. Everyone needs to play a role, since the criminal justice system does tend to be involved. But in your experience, LaDonna, how has law enforcement and the criminal justice system played a positive role in preventing domestic violence or making victims feel that they can receive services?
Well, that's a good question. And I the other gentleman, I'm not sure what his name was, who was on the phone, who was talking about law enforcement, and I agree with the things that he was saying about when the victim calls the police and having the, you know, the repercussions that the victim, a lot of victim blaming when she seeks out help, you know, in any type of law enforcement advocacy that she could get. We just did a law enforcement training where we trained judges and the prosecutor's office, and we trained a couple of counties of police officers who were first responders and their domestic violence units. We also did, because we do so much in the Black community, it was a culturally specific training, because, like the gentleman was saying, when the African American community, you know, who has not had a good relationship with law enforcement, over, not just in social media has been able to view this and cameras on police officers, but this has been a historical problem for decades with the African American community. So now it's more visible. So when you have too, with the domestic violence laws changing, where they have these new dual arrest laws where somebody has to go, women don't want to call the police because systemically African-American men are arrested for domestic violence, and women now more readily than white women or white men are. And like he was saying, when you take him out of the community, When she calls the police and takes them out of the community, it makes her vulnerable economically, but it also, depending on what community she lives in, makes her vulnerable to crime in the community as well when the man is out of the house now. And she's, like, caught between these two things in the system. We have to train, you know, child protective services, because if she calls the police and he's gone, then that takes economic food out. But if he stays and she calls the police and she gets back together, then child protective services want to take the children because they feel like they're being abused as well. And 46% of men who beat women do beat their children as well. That's proven. And so black women, like I said, have so many barriers, but law enforcement, we have to reach out and we have to train them on how to respond in communities of color, how cultural differences play a role in the way black women, their help-seeking behaviors are different than mainstream society because of the systemic barriers that they suffer when they try to reach out to law enforcement and so many other avenues. And so also like the pastor was saying about economic problems and men wanting to be able to provide, that's one of the avenues. Male dominance and economic abuse is something that the man does to the woman more so for power and control issues. But it's also kind of like blaming domestic violence on alcohol and drugs. Well, we know it's been proven that alcoholism and drug addiction does not cause domestic violence. It's used to help further objectify the victim and to minimize the batterer's behavior. But most women that are beaten by their husbands, you know, they're beaten by sober batterers. And we know statistically that domestic violence in the United States is at its highest numbers around Super Bowl time. More women call crisis hotline around Super Bowl time in this country than any other time in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's this posturing that happens. We have to do more training with law enforcement. They have to be able to embrace the community on how black women are help-seeking behaviors and why we look uncooperative with law enforcement. It's not that we want to be uncooperative, but we just want, if we call you, we want you to make him leave many times. We don't want him arrested or we don't want him locked up because many times the black woman doesn't want to give him to the system either because she doesn't trust what they're going to do with him once he leaves the household. Right. It's incumbent upon, she's doing all the heavy lifting when it comes to trying to get advocacy. And so that's why the church being educated is so important about the dynamics. When the pastor was talking about counseling, premarital counseling, you need to do individual counseling and show her the power and control wheel. That needs to be part of a policy and procedure in the churches. You know, have you experienced any of these type of behaviors, you know, in this relationship? And many people have never even seen the power and control wheel, you know, in the church. They have no idea what that is. All those
Sorry, LaDon.
Go ahead, Carolyn.
No, it speaks to what we've all said and what I think all the pastors have agreed to is how important it is to have pastoral counseling. But I think you said something mm-hmm. that's really important, and that is that sometimes you may want to consider counseling the, you know, counseling them separately because sometimes
yeah.
there is a, mm-hmm. you know, level of a barrier there where someone may not want to speak if their potential partner is there. So I said I just wanted to address that, but to just address,
right.
You know, a lot of what you said in terms of the training, and it speaks
mm-hmm.
to what the role of law enforcement, the criminal justice system, child protective services, and all of these institutions can play, but it goes
mm-hmm.
back to the faith leader in the black community, which has a
right.
very strong role.
Impact.
And we know
mm-hmm.
that if we can partner with the faith leaders, that
mm-hmm.
really does create a more unified, you know, front when we're working with these institutions, because faith leaders can have a more powerful role when it comes to how we deal with law enforcement and the criminal justice system and have more involvement because they're more educated.
And many times, mm-hmm. you know, law enforcement are really willing to work with pastors more so than anything else. I mean, many times when something happens,
exactly.
a pastor shows up to the police station, if a pastor shows up and a judge knows that this pastor, he has a relationship with community service, that a judge and a police officer is more likely to, you know, take in consideration what advocacy this pastor is going to play to help solve some of this conflict rather than, you know, enforce any legal action against the people that are involved or be able to know that they need to enforce legal action against the batterer or the perpetrator, you know, when you have those type of relationships with the court.
Well, I know all of the ministers who are on the phone tonight have intentions and have good thoughts about this project. And I want to thank Pastor Captain for sharing with us your own personal experience, because I think I came to present it at the church, and he shared that his daughter had this situation. Okay. And so that, you know, we want to certainly, you know, continue to keep her in prayer and, yes, you know yes. that these are the kinds of issues that we are dealing with. And as he said, he had never really preached about this from the pulpit. So I think this gives everyone an opportunity to know that we are moving forward with this work. We have
right.
an upcoming training, all-day conference training. Our first will be in February. Actually, LaDonna will be joining us, as it's critically important to have female leaders, and she is a leader within her work and within the church around this issue of domestic violence. But to have all of you continue to join us in the work that we're doing around this project and the partnerships that we will create to create some cross-referrals and to create partners and collaboration that we don't currently have within our communities. So I'd like to give everyone an opportunity to have an ending comment, because we do want to move forward and talk about how we can begin to look at programs and protocols and how we can help churches create better capacity and their ability through our trainings and our continual work with this project. So we'd like to have our co-host, George, and move forward and have everyone give a lasting comment.
Well, what a profound conversation we just had. I just want to put out a challenge. Everything that I encounter is always deliberate, that the ministers